And welcome everyone to another episode of All Things Trek. I'm Oren.
I am Grace.
And I am David.
And today we are joined by our next in our series of special guests as we move towards the finale of the show, and that today is one Johnny Steverson.
Hello.
Now, Johnny Steverson, you are, of course, or at least I assume you are, a Star Trek fan, but we are not just here to talk about Star Trek. We have, in fact, a real space program, or space project, I should say, that we are discussing today. And would you please tell our listeners what it is?
Star Trek fan, of course. Diehard Star Trek fan, I would say. You know, Star Trek is something that inspired me in my youth. And, you know, I'm here today to talk about Enterprise in Space, which is an amazing space project where we will be launching the first NSS Enterprise orbiter. We're going to be taking student experiments aboard. We're going to be testing new space technologies, and what we would like to do is take up a virtual crew. For those that are listening, you can go to enterpriseinspace.org to be part of that virtual crew and have your name in space and be part of this educational space endeavor.
So just to be clear, so this is this will actually be a spacecraft called Enterprise, the first vessel, as it were, to bear that name to fully leave Earth's atmosphere.
Correct. And one of the unique things about this, for everyone listening, we're going to be doing a ship design contest. So you will actually have the opportunity to design the first Enterprise orbiter. Mm-hmm. And that is something very unique to this project. So, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to enter the ship design contest. We'll take things sketched out on napkins if we have to.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's a very unique thing. So you can be part of this unique historical tribute to all those visionaries of Star Trek and those who have been inspired by Star Trek.
Right, and Star Trek has a long history of inspiring the actual space program. Of course, Nichelle Nichols, who we all know is a huge badass, has been a spokesman for NASA for some time. And just so that everyone knows, like as I've said, we have never actually had a ship called Enterprise in space. I do want to take this moment to just say that our thoughts are, of course, with the crew of the Virgin Galactic Enterprise. I don't know how closely you guys follow space news, but that was an unfortunate tragedy in which one crewman lost his life. And I don't know what the status of the second one is, but of course, you know, as space fans, we're always thinking about them. Now, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about this design competition. So you say you're accepting like all kinds of designs from like people who are like actually know about space, how to build space program or spaceships, to people who are just like, it would look cool if it looked like this.
Correct.
Where can people go to enter into this contest?
So you just go to enterpriseinspace.org and go click on our ship design contest section. All the contest rules are listed there. One thing I'd like for everyone to keep in mind is, like I said before, you don't have to be a rocket scientist first. And second of all, we'll be taking these designs and working with a space company to make it space worthy.
Okay.
So you don't necessarily have to keep all those aerodynamic aspects in mind when you're submitting a ship design to us, which all of that stuff is listed out on the website at enterpriseinspace.org.
Now, this is getting probably a little bit technical. I don't know if you even know the answer to this off the top of your head, but when this thing is created, is it going to be like a module that is kept inside a larger rocket, which is then released once it is in space, or will it be actually like exposed to the atmosphere as it's going up?
Hey,
Oren did his homework.
Yeah, he did do his homework. I was just about to say that. You know, our preferred launch vehicle is going to be a secondary payload for what we would hope to be SpaceX, to be on one of the SpaceX rockets. Yeah, so we'll be a secondary payload, and then, of course, we'll be in orbit. So going back to the student experiments, some of them will be internal, and some of them will be external, which exposed to space. So that kind of answers both of your questions there. So you did do your homework for sure.
Ah, we're such huge space nerds. I love space.
and you mentioned the projects. It also I saw some of the do's and don'ts of the design contest, and part of it was like don't be too thin in certain sections and allow for cargo and, you know, structure to it. Can you talk a little bit about that, like the guidelines for the design?
Absolutely, that's a great question. We have a list of rules on our website. We've actually modified a couple of those, and
Well, and right off the bat, we should probably say, like, you know, licensed movie properties. Like, we probably can't do a Millennium Falcon or an actual Enterprise, right? Is there copyright issues with that?
Well, we can dare to dream.
It's probably not going to have a warp core, I think, is maybe what we're getting at here.
Yet.
Yeah, we have a couple of listed to-dos and to-don'ts on the website. Mm-hmm. We definitely want to stay away from, you know, those warp nacelles and things like that. We want this to be something very unique, first of its kind, something that is really, you know, stands alone in its element with this unique project as big as it is.
Do you have an idea of what sort of power source it's going to have? Because I know that you talk about some of the experiments being passive, where they don't require active power, and some of them being active, where they do. So I'm just wondering, what does it get its electricity from?
You know, that's another great question. There's going to be, we'll be working with the company, once we finalize a design, we'll be working with the engineering company to lay out all those specifications internally where that stuff's going to be. Just to let you know, it's going to be about 8 feet long by about 6 feet tall. So those are about the rough dimensions of this. So it's not going to be small.
Right.
So, you know, we're going to have to keep in mind, you know, having the 100-plus student experiments in there. You know, we're thinking about doing some unique things and partnering with a technology company where we can have, like, an iPad in the window so you could take a picture of yourself waving down in space. Yeah, so there's a lot of unique aspects to this, and it's so awesome to watch this develop as it takes on. It's almost like a snowball effect. It's just getting bigger and bigger, and where we're starting off is with the ship design contest. So for all those out there that are interested in that, you know, everything you would need to know is definitely on our website.
Right. Now, who do you have to, like, get permission from when you decide to launch something into orbit? Like, do you have to file a flight plan for this, or is it just, or can you just build your rocket?
Is there airspace that you need the right to enter?
There is so much to consider when launching something into space, and one thing with this project is that we're not going to be adding to the space junk up there. Right. So that's why we want to partner with someone that's has strong experience like SpaceX. So they'll be the ones, you know, providing us with the plan, taking care of all those details and specifics during launch. But a great thing about this is that we plan on collecting this orbiter after it's orbited for a while.
So you're going to get it back.
That's correct. You know, that's a great thing. So when you're
not just going to leave it hanging up there,
twisting in
the solar wind.
or allow it to fall into some wormhole and trans-dimensional warp.
I was worried about that. What are the chances of this thing, like, gaining sentience and coming back to, like, you know, find the creator or purify life on Earth? I mean, because I've seen, like, some documentaries about that being a problem.
You know, that's so funny that you say sentience, because we've just brought on the addition of the Enterprise Mind, and that is basically going to be like the Star Trek computer, so these students can basically talk to the ship up in orbit and get specifications on their student experiments, check the temperature in space, see how fast the craft is orbiting. It's a very unique project that we've just – a great addition to Enterprise in space.
So not only can students send up experiments, but they can monitor them in real time, because they have this communication hookup that, like, a lot of ships don't have, because, of course, communicating with space isn't easy.
Correct. And we're really big on the education aspect, and that's what drew me personally to Enterprise in Space. Mm-hmm. You know, in comparison to other projects that take up student experiments, the students with Enterprise in Space are not going to have to pay to send their projects up into orbit, as opposed to other projects where they would have to pay. And that's kind of, you know, we're kind of latching on to Gene Roddenberry's vision to even the field. So, you know, students from poor countries can enter this contest just as easy as students from more developed, wealthy countries.
So it's an equal opportunity program.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
And what kind of experiments are you looking for, or is this just a, you know, surprise me with what they can come up with sort of thing?
That's exactly. We don't want to put any specifications on the student experiments, because we want to leave that open. We want the students to come up with the experiments they want, whether it be some kind of liquid volume experiment or something with crayons in space. We just want to leave that open.
See, if you'd come to my high school and asked me this, I would have been like, how about an experiment to see if I can burn my homework from space with a laser?
I would pay good money to see that.
Probably a little bit outside the mission parameters, but I think maybe we could go somewhere with that. I'll talk to you after the show.
We have this laser plan, see? We want to pitch it to you.
So how can people become part of this project? Because frankly, this project sounds awesome.
You know, that's another great question. We are looking for educators, volunteers. We have a great team for Enterprise in Space. So not only is this something that we're just saying we're going to do, it's something that we can actually do because we have the rocket scientists, the educators supporting this project. So when you go to see more about us, of course, go to enterpriseinspace.org, but check out our team. Check out the people that are involved with the project. And then, of course, go over to that ship design competition and sign up.
Now, you also, in addition to being part of the Enterprise in Space, you're also involved with the bridge restoration project, as I understand it.
That is correct. It's another amazing project, yeah.
And, of course, the bridge restoration project is awesome, partly because I got to sit in the chair when it was at Star Trek Las Vegas in 2013. So I would love to – sorry, go ahead.
We just restored our Captain Kirk's bridge chair. We're working on restoring the original series bridge as well. So if you checked out our Facebook, you'll see pictures of Kit, the Knight Rider car, the Back to the Future car, and the newly restored TOS captain's chair.
Man. So you're an inter-fandom group here.
I love anything.
Something for every nerd.
Yeah, any project that inspires youth with space education, I am all about that.
So this is sounding like it's probably like you're getting like all these different like restored bits of science fiction like history, and like as I recall, are there plans to put them together perhaps in some kind of museum?
Correct. Yeah, the bridge restoration has morphed into the Hollywood Science Fiction Museum. So if you want to know more about that, you can go to hollywoodscifi.org and you can see pictures of the bridge restoration progress and check out our progress with the museum as well, where we will be putting all those unique elements together for what I like to call the Mecca of all geek sci-fi.
Ooh.
Well, we will definitely have to take a trip down there when it's open.
Oh, most definitely.
Now, I have a couple other, like, technical space questions, because I love space. So when you send up a craft like this, is it like WALL-E, where there's, like, just this wall of space satellites that you have to navigate through, or, like, gravity, where you're just dodging debris everywhere, or is it just a matter of making sure you don't fly in certain areas?
Have you guys ever seen the 3D model map of all the space junk? It amazes me how we can even send things into space. These guys that send things into space and hop into rockets and go up, I have such a huge respect for them because it is such a dangerous field. There are so many unknowns, but thank goodness our technology has progressed to where we can track a lot of those things that are in orbit. So, you know, there's a lot of resources, websites that'll show you the space junk up there. But you're right, there is a method to the madness for sure.
And once it's up there, will like people on the ground be able to see it with a telescope? Like, can we look up on like a clear night and get out our home astronomy kits and track it as it goes by?
No, that's one thing we're working on with the observatories. Something that we would like to do is attach a laser to it, so we can attach some kind of laser communication.
Be lasers.
Sharks with lasers. No, we definitely want to incorporate some new technology, laser communication, to test that out. So we're hoping we'll have the opportunity for a lot of people, not only in observatories, but in other places, to communicate with the Enterprise as well. So we're trying to make this NSS Enterprise orbiter as multifaceted as possible.
Now, of course, you say lasers for communication purposes, but all I'm hearing is that I might be able to finally burn that 5-page essay I had to write. Frankly,
maybe you should have written it on lasers, okay?
Well, obviously, I made my mistakes back when I was when I was in middle school. So this project sounds frankly amazing, and it obviously links with Star Trek because Star Trek is science fiction, and there's different levels of how much science and how much fiction there've been over different episodes. So The Star Trek part of the topic today is that I wanted to talk about episodes that have real science in them. And of course, we can bounce back and forth between talking about the project and these episodes. But before we even get into that, Johnny, I would love to know what your history is with Star Trek. Like, how did you get into it, and like, what has it meant to you?
Oh, you know, my father introduced me to Star Trek when I was a kid, and then, of course, I fell in love with it. But then, living in Houston, Texas, I am conveniently located next to NASA. So I immediately became one of those space kids, space camp, space everything. And, you know, why I did that was Star Trek. And Star Trek has really inspired me to get into the technical field. And if it wasn't for Star Trek, I can honestly say I would not be involved with Enterprise in Space or all of these other Star Trek-related projects. Star Trek truly has inspired me. You know, it's from being a NASA to being older to volunteering my time to those kids as well. It's really translated. It got me involved in the technical field, so I became a technical specialist in IT. Started to develop computers. Of course, computers and technology have always interested me since I started watching Star Trek, and that gave birth to my PR and website development company, WebTech Promotions. And through that, that's how I met all these other Star Trek projects.
Awesome. So, talking about some of these specific Star Trek episodes. I actually looked up that NASA has an entire page on the science of Star Trek, which I find to be hilarious. And
that's
my
adorable.
My favorite part is when they're talking about...
They really know their audience.
Yeah. My favorite part is when they're talking about the transporter. And they're like, so we have no idea how a transporter would actually work, but we do think that they should be using it more for space battles. And I was like, oh my god, NASA, you guys are such geeks. So the first episode that came to mind, as I was thinking, and this might surprise you, of episodes that actually that use real science, is The Way to Eden. And
oh,
I think...
Really? That's the first that you can think?
I mean, it's not the only one. It was just the first one that came to mind, because I reached this episode, Grace. I seriously
we
reached.
We are not Herbert.
No.
Speak for yourself.
Herbert.
Speak for yourself.
Herbert. No, so this episode, we've talked about before, like how ridiculous it is on so many levels, but it does have one very exciting piece of real science in it when Chekhov is talking to his hippie ex-girlfriend and they're searching for a planet.
And who doesn't have one, really?
Right. She talks about how he talks about how the way they find planets is by looking for little wobbles in the movement of stars to indicate that there's some kind of other gravity exerting pressure on the star, just in the same way that stars' gravity exert pressure on us. And that is an actual way we look for planets. Like, you know, that is a real thing that we do. Of course, and Johnny, do you remember this episode that we're talking about here?
I do. It brings back some memories of some memos I've seen from Gene Roddenberry talking with some of the NASA people to pull them in for NASA technical terms and stuff. So that's one thing I love about Star Trek is it tries to pull in as much real science as possible.
So, you know, we have the planet detection method. What do you think the odds are, scientifically speaking, on a planet made of acid? Because as I recall,
just
that was
planet
what they,
acid.
That was what
wasn't
they
that
found.
Where the wasn't that where the space hippies were headed? Yeah.
Yeah, that was what Eden turned out to be.
All along, the hippies were just looking to score some acid.
Wrong kind of acid, I think. That'd probably give you a bad trip.
Says you.
It was acid or poison planet because all the fruit and vegetation was poisonous. But then they can't even walk on the soil because the soil like burnt, you know, like acid on their feet. It was kind of trippy. Sad. They just wanted to be happy, and then they get that.
They just wanted to hang out on this planet. Now, the next one that I was thinking of, and again, this is kind of a strange one, is, and I admit I had to write this down, I couldn't remember this off the top of my head, is 11001001, which, you know, I don't know who has problems remembering that one. So this is the episode with the Bynars in it. And this, the plot is that the Bynars steal the Enterprise because they need to basically use it as a portable hard drive. They need to back up all of their data because they're having like some kind of huge solar activity that's going to disrupt all of their planetary systems.
Like you do.
So first of all, actually, this brings up a question. Johnny, is that a serious concern for the Enterprise in space, like some kind of interference from solar activity?
You know, there's
solar
a lot of things
or
that
just radiation.
Kind of like they hid the satellites behind Mars when the comet was coming.
Yeah.
You know, that's definitely something that the engineering team will be taking into consideration. I highly doubt that we'll have to you know, actually, why don't we just make some shields for the craft? We'll just make some shields.
But then the shields well, then will, then, you know, go ahead, David.
Well, then you'll also need a deflector dish.
Maybe get some
particles out of the way. Once you get started, you have to just keep going, because really, you got to go big or go home.
Some bioneural gel packs. Because the problem with shields is that the other guys always know your shield frequency somehow. Like, you know, man, we should probably change these because everyone knows them.
they got to stop making that information public, really.
No,
there's like a space WikiLeaks out there they're having to deal with.
Well, they keep making the password like 1234, and it's just bad.
Can always get into the air shield.
Yeah.
So how?
There's always a way.
It's gonna the Enterprise in space satellite craft is gonna be out in Earth orbit, but how far up is it going to be? Like how, you know, high up? How? What's the? You know, it's not going to go to outer deep space or out of the atmosphere. I mean, out of the like orbit. You know, orbit of the
correct.
Earth,
but yeah, it'll be up,
how far?
It'll be up in high orbit. That's why we're going to be utilizing SpaceX instead of something like a weather balloon, because we would definitely want to put this up into high orbit. That way we can control things and have as much control as possible. Because we got to keep in mind that we're going to be controlling the re-entry process of this as well. So yeah, high orbit.
So I would need a very long ladder if I wanted to like climb up and like scratch my name on this thing. This is not going to be within arm's reach. Is what it sounds like.
Hey, if you want your name on board, all you have to do is just go to enterpriseinspace.org, donate $20 to become a virtual crew member.
Yeah,
and it's much easier than climbing a ladder.
Now you brought up the idea of reentry. Now that's another thing that's always fascinating. How exactly does that work? Because as I understand it, reentry is often the hardest part because you have all this heat and all this friction that can like cause the craft to explode or just, you know, burn up.
I love all the technical questions. You've definitely done your homework.
I watch the Discovery Channel a lot.
It's what we keep them around for.
You know, one thing where a lot of technology companies out there have developed these re-entry technologies that don't have a platform to test on. And so that's one thing that's unique with Enterprise in space is we're going to actually be giving a platform to sure test these technologies that have proven themselves for re-entry. And so we're in the process right now with our rocket engineers, Fred Becker, and our CEO, Sean Case, to talk about those specifications and which one we're going to pick. Because there are a couple of different options that we have for re-entry and something that could deploy a heat shield in front. There's a multitude of different things. So, you know, that's another great thing that's unique about Enterprise in space is being able to test these new technologies and helping these other technology companies advance.
And nowadays, like, the sort of the classic image of the Apollo program is it having these like these big chutes like, you know, trailing out behind it. But nowadays, do they still primarily use parachutes, or do they have like actual like rockets that they fire to slow down?
You know, even with NASA's UFO, you know, they had the cushions that came around the bottom to soften the entry when it landed in the water. But yes, they still use the chute systems.
Okay,
they're a lot more advanced now. But definitely using the same proven technology, even with the new rockets, the new space launch system, they're utilizing proven technology to get us into space.
And the UFO project you mentioned, that was the experiment they're trying to figure out how to land a craft safely on Mars, isn't it?
They're testing their technologies there.
It looks like a giant donut. Like when they deploy it, it is very odd looking. I love the idea of shooting that at Mars.
What is it with you and spacecrafts that look like breakfast pastries? I mean, there's first the Ferengi croissant, and now this.
Look, the Ferengi ship looks delicious. Okay, it looks flaky, it's flaky and warm and moist, and I want one. But I just love the idea of, like, there probably aren't any little green men on Mars, but if there were, I love the idea of them watching these insane-looking spaceships that we send over. It's like, so that one looks like a donut, and before that they sent over this rover that has, like, this rocket crane that it gets lowered down on. The spaceships are crazy. They look so weird. I love it. And now, the reason that I had originally brought up 11001001, yes, I think that was correct, is that they do use real science in that episode, in that solar activity can cause, like, communication and, like, electronics failures. Like, we have seen that happen a couple of times. And this is supposed to be, like, sort of the mother of all solar storms, as I recall. Now, what I was a little unclear on is, like, how they were able to transfer all the data from their planet to the Enterprise. Like, that's, you know, it takes me, like, you know, like, up to an hour to transfer, like, one movie file from my flash drive to my hard drive, and don't ask how I got the movie file. So, Johnny, how, like, what's the upload like? Like, you know, how much data can you legitimately send up to a spacecraft, you know, like the Enterprise module that you guys are planning?
You know, that the International Space Station has been testing technologies for like that for the longest time. I fortunately had the honor of having a VIP tour here at the NASA Johnson Space Center facility and the National Buoyancy Laboratory, so we got to see the giant pool. And we got to see those guys communicating with the space station, and let's just say there are way too many computer screens in there. So, I mean, it's just a matter of power and communications. The communication, that's not a problem. The upload, that's just a matter of the technology that you have in place. And over the last 10 years, we have developed some really awesome CPU technology, and they're utilizing some people are utilizing live cell, like, bioorganisms in these computer chips. It's crazy. It's starting to get, like, Star Trek Voyager biomimetic gel packs.
Cool.
I know, it's awesome. So, and with that Enterprise mind that we'll have on board to talk to, you know, we're working out the specifics of what's going to be housed, where it's going to be housed, it's going to be in the cloud, all those kind of things. So we're going to make it to where communication is quick, and utilizing those technologies to make that happen for sure.
So the next episode that I have on my list and is the episode Deja Q. And I am, of course, referring...
Quite a jump we're taking.
Well, of course, I find nothing more scientific than an omnipotent being turned into a naked man. No, so the part of this episode that I love for science, I love the Q part for its emotional, you know, drama, right? Like, that part is great. But the part that I love for science is, so they've got this moon that is in a decaying orbit and is falling towards the planet, which is something that, you know, could legitimately happen. Like, you know, sometimes objects are not in stable orbits and they will, you know, continue to fall and then they'll burn up. And if it's something as big as that moon, that's going to be a real problem for the people living on the ground. But the reason specifically that I love this episode is that they use very, like, down-to-earth, like, tech terms. Like, when Geordi is talking about pushing it, he's not saying, we're going to need to, you know, reroute power through the, you know, through the quantum, you know, wingnut majig. He's saying that, you know, we need to apply a delta V of this much. And I'm only, like, vaguely understanding what delta V actually means, but, you know, it is a real term, and they have this issue of, like, being able to project enough force to actually move this asteroid. Now, of course, the Enterprise and Space Module is not going to be moving asteroids, but there, like, we have a similar thing where, like, how big a rocket do you need to get a payload that is, like, 8 feet long and has all these experiments in it into space? Johnny, do you have any idea about that? Like, sorry, go ahead.
Yes. No, it's when you're launching something into space, they you pay per the weight. So
yeah.
Hailing frequencies open?
No. Yes, very good.
you know, that's why we're going to be hopefully utilizing SpaceX, because they have the space to launch our craft. You know, they have proven themselves in launching things into orbit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the weight consideration is definitely something that we have to keep in mind when designing this craft. Because, again, we definitely have been will be given specifications on how much it can weigh as a secondary payload on this rocket.
Right. It's like, you know, we cannot have if it weighs too much, like there's not a lot of wiggle room on these craft. They're very precisely tuned.
Yeah, you have to be specific when you send something to space for sure.
And there's no, unlike with Deja Q, we can't use our warp field to reduce the mass of the module. At the moment, that is beyond our capability. Hang on, I'm getting a message from Larry.
Ooh.
This may be looking a little too far ahead, because obviously we're dealing with the launch coming up, but is this something, has it been talked about or, you know, plans in place for this to be a reusable craft, or is this going to be... You know, once it's up there and it comes back down, it'll go into a museum or at the, you know, Kennedy Center or something? Or is this going to be something that could go up, do this mission, and then come back down and then use the same craft again later? Or is it going to be something to upgrade, you know, each time it goes? Or any idea for that?
Yeah, that's something that we're going to be keeping in mind. When we bring this back, we'll be bringing back the student experiments. And then we have a plan to put it on tour around museums, so you're correct. So if you donate to the project, your name will be toured with that ship around the world. And we're hoping to have the Smithsonian be part of that tour. And so it will
awesome.
Be something, yeah, it'll be something great to donate to, you know, and you get to see your name come back with these student experiments. We'll be collecting those, and then, you know, you get to be part of this historic project with having your name involved in it.
Now, so we've been talking a lot of science, and I love science, but I do want to put a little bit of variety in there. And so, Johnny, just from a pure, like, enjoyment factor, I would love to know, do you have a favorite episode of Star Trek? That just, like, I'm just going to put you on the spot with this one, like, right here.
Oh, my goodness. You know, being such a technology buff and loving things blowing up and all that stuff, I'm a big fan of Voyager and the Borg, so I would have to say that last episode of Voyager where they came out with those new torpedoes and that armor technology, I was really hoping that they would develop a series showcasing that new technology with, like, Riker on a ship. Oh, my gosh, how awesome would that have been? Riker with ablative armor. unstoppable. But that I would have to say the, you know, end game of Voyager would probably have to be my favorite.
So, and like, is Voyager's like your favorite series overall?
The Next Generation is amazing.
True.
It has some solid storylines. You fall in love with those characters. You see them develop. You know, had a crush on Gates McFadden growing up. You know that. She's beautiful, beautiful, still to this day, beautiful woman. She is very classy and educated. I love it. The Next Generation would have to be my favorite. My favorite episode would probably have to be that end game.
Have you watched much of the other series? Like, do you have time for TOS or Deep Space Nine?
You know, that's one thing. I didn't have the time to watch Deep Space Nine until just doubling back on it this last year, and I went through every episode, and I don't know why people had a negative view on that. I loved Deep Space Nine. They kind of focused on things that, you know, other series were kind of, what I say, scared or too conservative to go. They explored some dark elements. What really touched me was, you know, with Nog and the PTSD with him losing his leg. I mean, that's some amazing storylines right there. I mean, Doug Drexler and those guys did some amazing stuff with Deep Space Nine and those sets. It was just such... Deep Space Nine was such a rich Star Trek series for me.
Well, of course, Deep Space Nine being my favorite series, you don't have to convince me.
Oh, good.
Now, I just asked because it was like it seemed the natural course since it seems like you really love TNG, which you rightly should because TNG is great, and I just wanted to know how you felt about some of the other shows. Now, one thing, since you actually work in engineering, probably at least more than any of us do, does it ever like are there episodes that you're watching and you're just like, that's not how it works? It doesn't physics like that. You know, it really bothers you.
There's been a couple of episodes like that.
Please, you know, do tell.
Which are the ones that really grind your jimmies?
I would really love to hop in a warbird and spin around the sun and see what happens. I there's a lot of things in Star Trek that I've been wait a minute, does it actually really work that way? Like, how are the physics of how is Voyager standing on three tiny little legs like that? You know, things like that, most definitely.
So when you time travel, do you really see, like, the heads come out of a cloud and then go back down into the cloud and then, you know, shape? That was just weird.
Exactly. So many questions. So many questions.
Well, you know, this is like getting into, like, really inside baseball with the way warp drive works, but this always bothered me, okay? So we've established that warp drive lets us go faster than the speed of light because it's sort of cheating by warping space. Right, like it is. So we're not actually moving faster than the speed of light. We're just sort of folding the universe around the ship, and so that lets us get around the law of relativity that says we can't go faster than light. But the law of relativity saying we can't go faster than light is also the thing that we depend on to be able to go backwards in time by going faster than light. So how does that work?
Yeah, that's one of the Voyager episodes where they turn into those. They evolved or devolved into those...
oh, yeah, into Newt's threshold.
Yeah, the threshold, exactly. And Janeway and Paris, you know, had a little happening.
Yeah, and then there's some poor
a little
Newt babies.
Happening.
There's some poor Newt babies, like, on that planet. We never found out what happened to them. You know,
what happens is that Janeway and Paris become deadbeat parents and leave them in space. It's really sad when you think about it.
Hey, I think we found a great storyline for Star Trek Online to pick up.
Yes! Oh my gosh, why haven't they done that?
You know, they're doing the Delta Quadrant right now.
Those little Newt babies grow up and then evolve and become sentient, and they're looking for mom and
but
dad.
But they've all got abandonment issues, yeah.
You know, they right now Star Trek Online...
We should be writing this down.
Right now Star Trek Online has... apparently you can go hang out with Captain Harry Kim... And he's like the liaison to like to the Kobali in the Delta Quadrant, and the Kobali are the race that they had that one episode where like Harry's dead girlfriend came back, and she had been like turned into a Kobali. And of course, this was not a character we'd seen before. They invented her like for that episode. So I think they should continue this trend and make Harry next go to the race of people that he got a demerit for sleeping with. I don't remember the name of the episode, but like they gave him like sort of a glowy STD. And we should just have a series of Star Trek Online missions that are a tour of Harry Kim's failed romance attempts.
Oh my gosh!
I think that would
be
keep
so them, long, though.
I think that would keep them going for
a while.
That'd
be a separate expansion pack, wouldn't it?
Now,
I'm in.
So, getting a little bit back into the realm of science, another episode that I absolutely love. This is a Voyager episode. It's probably the only Neelix episode I like because Neelix has plenty of problems. It is called Rise, and it is an episode where Neelix and Tuvok crash land on a planet that is being attacked by asteroids, and they have to get back into space by using a space elevator. And I love it because, first of all, Neelix actually acts like a cool character. But then I just really love space elevators, and they're so cool potentially. Have you looked into them much, Johnny?
I have. I actually just watched that episode last week. That's about where I'm at in Voyager.
So what do you think the odds are of us being able to reenact that someday? You know, we can get Tim Russ and Ethan Phillips and put them in a real space elevator, and we'll reshoot that episode.
Well, I can tell you the likelihood of me getting on a space elevator is very minimal.
Yeah, they're probably a little farther away, but they are just such a really... They're such a cool concept.
Yeah, they are. Could you imagine...
An elevator that goes to space.
Having space easily accessible like that. I'm sure, you know, you wouldn't have to worry about falling or anything, so it'd be fine. As long as I don't get a window seat.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, it would be really like, because right now you guys are doing this really cool project with the Enterprise in space. But if we had a space elevator, we could just do that whenever we wanted. We wouldn't need these giant rockets. We could just like put the module in the elevator and like, you know, press the up button and then just send it off.
Yeah, how awesome would that be if we could easily supply the International Space Station that quickly? That would be really nice if we could quickly develop that tech to have that, and then we could have space elevators all over the place and. Anyone could go.
It would be so rad. Of course, the ability to make space elevators requires, as I understand it, like pretty exotic materials that we don't really have the ability to mass produce right now. but it's like I love it when Star Trek does that sort of near future type stuff.
It makes you think. It makes you think, and that's what I love about it.
And there's another episode that is sort of a different genre, but or a different area, but it is similar in that it is it's pretty near future. Because so I think it's safe to say that everyone here likes Data. Is that a safe assumption to make?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I
so
love
Data
information.
Is,
yeah. Oh, wait, you mean the android.
Yes, so Data is a really cool character, right? But Data, he does represent a somewhat unrealistic leap in the Star Trek universe where it's like, apparently, they didn't have androids, and then suddenly Dr. Sung was like, I will make a fully operational, fully self-aware, walking, talking android. And they went from, like, no AI to Data. But there's an episode that does it a little more interestingly, I think, which is the Quality of Life is the name of the episode. This is the one with the exo-.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd be really interested to know, Johnny, what you think of this episode, because I love how it shows that the development of artificial intelligence is like kind of a gradual thing. Like, you know, we went from having just normal little worker bots to suddenly they start, they start exhibiting kind of interesting behavior that seems more human-like, but they don't look human. So it's interesting. I think that is really cool, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on that episode.
Yeah, I mean, that goes in, like, with Voyager and everyone treating the Doctor like a piece of technology, like, how things develop and those computer programming, the computers developing that, you know, those qualities of life, how do we define life? And those are the episodes that I really love. And there were a lot of them with Data. There's a couple of them with, the Doctor on Voyager. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I love that Star Trek touched on. And so, you know, keeping in mind we're going to be having this cognitive computer aboard the Enterprise, it's like, you know, this is great stuff. You know, we're entering into that age where robots are coming out, this cognitive computing, AI, and to see how that stuff develops, you know. Me personally, I would love to have the Doctor, you know, and that would be something that I would treat as an equivalent to life as myself, just because I'm that kind of person. And that goes back to the whole, you know, the vision that Gene Roddenberry had.
Well, there's a very interesting moment in the Measure of a Man where Bruce Maddox, who is kind of just an evil person, he's not a nice guy, but he says, if it were a box on wheels, I would not be facing this sort of opposition. And he's referring to Data. And that's why I love the Quality of Life episode, because we basically do have boxes on wheels now. Like, that's what the exocomps are, and Data is the one who has to stand up for them. So I thought that was great. And, of course, you also mentioned the Doctor. They have the episode Author, which is another great one. Now, on a more, like, physical science base, do you remember the episode of the original series called Arena? And this is the one where Kirk fights the Gorn.
Yes.
Now the reason I
famous.
Yeah, it is super well known. And the reason that I bring it up is that it is, even though the Mythbusters actually tested this, because of course Kirk builds basically a cannon out of like gunpowder. He like makes gunpowder out of sulfur, coal, and potassium nitrate, and then he uses like diamonds as a projectile, and he uses like a bamboo tube.
Science.
Yeah. And so the thing that I said, the Mythbusters tested this, and it turns out that probably wouldn't actually work. But it's the reason I love it is because it's like it's scientifically sound, even if the engineering isn't sound. Like, you know, you would have a hard time using a bamboo tube to make a cannon, but like all the things that they talk about, like with sulfur and saltpeter, like that is all real. Like that stuff actually all does what they say it does.
Yeah, they just didn't have the Captain Kirk magic.
Yeah, I mean, if they'd had William Shatner down there, it would have worked out really nice.
Well, and it was also space bamboo, so it was a little stronger.
Yeah, we don't have... Where
space
can we find
bamboo
that?
Space bamboo is the superior bamboo, apparently.
I think you can find it on Ryza.
Oh, dear. Nothing could ever happen on Ryza. Now, I'm trying to see if I can get Larry into the call, while I figure out the technical issues. Johnny, do you have an episode, like, you already told us what your favorite episode is. Do you have one that really stands out to you as far as, like, being awesome for science?
Your scientific favorite, if we will.
Before you said scientific favorite, I was going to jump into the Deep Space Nine episode where they did that video layover with going back in time to the Tribble episode.
Ooh.
Trials and Tribulations.
That was an awesome factor episode. As far as the science aspect of things, I had to give that a little thought. So much science.
All right. So while you're giving that some thought, let's see if I manage to do this right. I think we should have Larry Nemechek with us in the call. Larry, can you hear me? Okay, Larry, I appreciate you trying to join us, but we can not hear you at all. So I think we're gonna finish up with Johnny. But just so everybody knows, this is something that Larry has been personally involved in, and like he is part of the Enterprise and Space team. So you guys should,
and that doesn't help at all there.
Oh ha!
Oh,
no.
Clear now.
Oh, there we go.
Okay, I put you on speaker. That's what's weird on my phone. I'm on speaker, so you can.
So now we can definitely hear you better. It's there's still a little bit of breakup, but we can hear you better than we did before. So, Larry, I will ask again. I would love to know what is your connection with Enterprise and space, and how did you get into it?
Well, I got into it the way the team, and I'm glad you guys had a good show. I'm sorry I didn't come at the beginning, but
no worries.
So everybody out there is the it's called it. Here in Hollywood, and
sorry, you're fading out again, Larry.
Is it better? Any better?
It's really in and out. I think we're gonna go ahead and finish up the show. I think thanks for trying to join us, but I know that you were leaving.
I was walking around.
I know that you left a cool thing to try to come and talk to us, so I appreciate that, but I think I'll let you go and you can get back to the cool reunion you were doing.
Okay.
All right. So thanks for trying, Larry. Yeah, we will talk to you later.
Bye. You take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Definitely,
we can hear him say goodbye just fine.
Yeah.
Right. Well, definitely follow Larry on Twitter, @LarryNemechek. Check him out on Facebook, and then go to Larry Nemechek's website, Trekland, because there's always cool stuff with Larry and Dr. Trek.
Yeah. And go ahead, Johnny.
He has some of the coolest stuff on Trekland.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Johnny, can you tell us what Larry's involvement has been? You know, when did he get involved? How has he been involved? And I know he's been a big champion for supporter of the Enterprise and Space Project.
Yeah, Larry beamed aboard before I did, actually. He beamed aboard and started helping Enterprise and Space with the promotion aspect and getting out there to these conventions and getting our pamphlets out and just putting out the good word. Larry is I'm a huge fan of Larry's. I don't know if you guys are, but
totally.
I'm a huge fan, and to be able to be on the same team he is, you know, I have the little geek boy inside of me screaming. You know, it's the track factor, as I like to call it. And you know, I reading the books and the stuff he's put out, and I don't know if you guys have seen some of the interviews he's done with some of these the YouTube videos with like Gates McFadden and some of the backstage and some of the backstage stuff. Larry has a treasure chest of Star Trek goodies.
The Trekland trunk.
Yeah, for those people who love just like what people thought about things, to know more about the actors and all the back stuff. Oh, Larry has a treasure trove of that.
So you mentioned that, you're talking about from a technical perspective, you really, really liked the, I think it's Trials and Tribulations, the Deep Space Nine episode where they go back and interface with TOS footage. What was it about that episode that really impressed you?
Well, I think the way that they did the scenes where Kirk was walking in the same corridors, but one thing that really is those episodes that they go back and they have all this new tech mixed with the old tech. I think that's one thing that the juxtaposition between the two, you've got Deep Space Nine cloaked outside of the D7 space station. How crazy is that? And it's new tech and old tech next to each other, mixed in with Dax and Sisko walking around the corridors trying to find the bomb. That's definitely up there on my list of favorites for sure.
Well, and they've got
just the other day. Just I think it might have been even last night, but a day or two ago, I couldn't decide between watching original series or DS9, so I just watched Trials and Tribulations and got both. But one of the things I loved about Dax was she was like geeking out about, you know, she was holding the classic tricorder saying, oh, I love this design, and she was kind of like the audience.
She's as excited as the audience,
yeah. Exactly.
Now, excuse me, well, I completely lost my train of thought. I was like, I had a point to make that was relevant, and then it was just like, poof. Oh, right.
We were chugging along, and then no more.
The other great thing about that...
You mean how the tribbles are... You mean how the tribbles are detestable, disgusting creatures?
Yes, that should that was be certainly. Okay. But like that episode is also great, just because there's this vicarious feeling of how awesome the DS9 cast thinks the original series was. Like you've got Dax walking around being like, "I just love these old props that they had." And it's like, yes, we all love those old props. Thanks, Dax.
Well, like she told Cisco, she lived during that time as I think it was Emini, so she had It was nostalgic for her, whereas the other people were like, don't touch anything, we'll blow up the ship.
Yes, she's wanting to go and meet Kirk and mess up the timeline.
Man, that, you know, sometimes you get the timeline needs a little messing, and I think Dax would be like not a terrible match for Kirk, honestly. I think she could give him a run for his money. But
I'm right there with Janeway. I want to stay away from the temporal mechanics of things if we can.
Yeah.
Which is ironic, because I think Janeway has time-traveled more than any other captain. So,
indeed.
All right. We are about at the end of our time. Thank you so much for joining us, Johnny. This has been an amazing show. And once again, let's reiterate, where can people go if they want to be part of the Enterprise in space and support it?
And when is the launch and that type of thing?
Yeah, so the launch is scheduled around 2019, so we are on a 5-year mission.
Yeah.
And yeah, so, you know, we'd like to say $20, 2 million people for $20 will make this happen. We've launched in 2019. We want to make this an even playing field for everyone. So first thing to do would be go to enterpriseinspace.org to learn more about us. There you can learn more about our mission, and you can also enter the ship design contest. It's phase one of this project, so we can get the ship design, and the specifications for that are also on enterpriseinspace.org.
All right, awesome. Well, thank you everyone for listening. You now have a mission to go to real space, because we love fictional space with Star Trek, but real space is also amazing because it is up there, and we need to explore it. So thank you everyone for listening. We will be back next week. We will be rejoined by our recurring guests, Sue from the Anomaly Podcast, and Andy, the first-time Trekker. We'll be talking about their love of TNG. We hope you will listen to us then. And until next week, this will be All Things Trek, signing off.
Thank you, guys.